So on the line, I have on BBC Radio Derby, Dr. Peter Saunders from Care Not Killing, of course, who are against assisted suicide. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Good morning. We've had Jane, of course, explaining her own personal story with her mum asking her that question and having that conversation where her mum wanted her to help her when the time came. And, of course, in the end, although Jane had said, yes, she would always, she would help her, she couldn't go through with it in the end. I do want to hear, of course, your side from Care Not Killing, because you're promoting more and better palliative care is the idea, and ensuring that existing laws against euthanasia and assisted suicide are not weakened or repealed. That's your stance, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And I'm sorry, I missed the earlier conversation that you had, so I'm speaking not being aware of that context.
Of
but
course.
I guess we're talking about this very much because it was the whole issue was brought to the fore again by the Coronation Street programme last night. And yeah, I mean, as a doctor who's managed many dying patients, I think what concerned me about the programme last night, and I think these things need to be aired and talked about, they're really important issues that many people think about, but what concerned me last night is that I thought the coverage there gave credence to a lot of what I call quite dangerous myths about death and dying. And I think when people are watching this from, you know, the worried well perspective, if you like, it can be very easy to get the wrong idea. And the things that concern me, first of all, that I think it's a myth that people dying of cancer want to die, that the overwhelming majority don't. They want good care and support. And in fact, many people who contemplate, you know, perhaps ending their lives if things got too bad, when they find out what care is available and find out as well how they adapt to an illness, they almost invariably change their minds. I think another myth is that cancer pain can't be controlled, when it almost invariably can. That effective pain relief renders you confused and losing your personality, which it certainly doesn't in good hands. But I think that the most worrying thing to me about the depiction we saw last night, a powerful drama though it was, is the idea that the lives of some sick and disabled people are not worth living, and that it's therefore reasonable for people with these conditions to end their lives. And I think what particularly concerns me is that the idea that suicidal thoughts that sick or disabled people have should be managed very differently from suicidal thoughts in people who are not sick and disabled. And I think that's a very dangerous road to go down, really.
A text has come through, actually, Peter, while you've been talking. Anonymous texter saying, just my opinion, but we have no choice to be or not be born, but we should have the choice to live or die. If you are in a mental state of being able to make decisions and being able to understand exactly what's going on, if mentally you are firing on all cylinders, that we put it, then should it not be down to your choice? If you feel this is it, I don't want to go on anymore, can I not decide to do that if mentally I'm capable of doing that?
Well, committing suicide or attempting to do so is not against the law.
Mm.
And that was a thing about the program last night, that you know, there's no one actually supporting her or helping her, even her husband. Attempting suicide is not illegal. People are free to do that, although I think it's a very bad idea. But what is illegal in Britain is assisting someone to take their own life, or you know, providing euthanasia, ending their life for them. And the reason it's illegal is very simple. It's for reasons of public safety. And there have been many attempts to change the law on this. Parliament's debated it twice here in the last 6 years in the House of Lords. There was a bill up in Scotland a few years ago. And on every occasion, the bill has been defeated over concerns for vulnerable people. And the argument that's won the day has been that if you change the law, you inevitably end up putting pressure on some vulnerable people, whether they're sick or disabled or depressed or elderly. They feel pressure to end their lives so as not to be a burden, either financially or emotionally, on loved ones or, you know, on the community. And once you, the point is, once you change the law, you remove the disincentive. People can feel that sense of duty, and the right to die can so easily become the duty to die, and that's a very dangerous thing, particularly at a time of economic recession, and particularly in some families where there might be people who've got a vested emotional or financial interest in the death of another person. So the first duty of Parliament is to protect the vulnerable citizens, and that's been always the balance. The best way of doing that is to have the law that we have at the moment, which on the one hand provides very strong disincentives to abuse and exploitation, and on the other gives a lot of discretion to judges and prosecutors to be merciful and compassionate in hard cases.
Dr. Peter Saunders from Care Not Killing, obviously you've given your kind of points across about your stance with Care Not Killing. Joe Cartwright from Dignity in Dying is on the other line, of course, has been listening to your argument. Of course, a national campaign and membership organisation. That Dignity in Dying's vision is, we believe that everyone has the right to a dignified death. So, Joe, good morning.
Good morning.
You've just been listening to Peter there.
I have.
What would you come back with?
Well, I'm really concerned about people who are vulnerable now, and I think that a safeguarded assisted dying law would provide protection for people who don't want the choice of an assisted death, but importantly, it would also provide the choice for people who do, and a choice which is involves healthcare professionals. So the lady you were talking to before, I only caught the end of it, but absolutely heartbreaking that her mum asked her to help her to die, and she's still carrying that with her because she wasn't able to provide the support that her mum wanted. If we were to have a safeguarded assisted dying law, people who were dying and people who were mentally competent could have that choice as a very last resort if they'd explored all the other options and none of those things were working for them. There are some people for whom good quality palliative care isn't enough, and it's those people, for those people, that we're campaigning for the choice of an assisted death.
I mean, Dr. Peter Saunders obviously brings up some valid points that this could be abused if it was made legal.
He does, but the evidence from countries where assisted dying is legal, Oregon, for example, in America, has had assisted dying for 15 years, and the evidence shows that this isn't abused, that it's a small number of people who choose assisted dying, but so many more people gain comfort from the fact that it's available to them. And again, people aren't protected now. I'm worried about vulnerable people now who can travel abroad to have an assisted death at Dignitas without any safeguards in this country. People who are choosing, making decisions like the story last night in Coronation Street portrayed, people choosing to end their lives at home, sometimes succeeding and sometimes not succeeding, people asking loved ones for help to die. There are so many negative consequences of the law now which need fixing, and I believe that the fix is to have an assisted dying law which has upfront safeguards where these issues can be out in the open and discussed.
I mean, actually, Dr. Peter Saunders, I'll come back to you, because there are situations, I mean, we've talked about if you're mentally able to make that decision, you know, that you want to end your life, but actually physically you possibly aren't able to take your own life and do need that assistance. What would you say to that?
Well, it's precisely the experience in other countries, I think, that rings alarm bells. I certainly have a very different take on Oregon to Joe. And what's even more alarming are the lessons that we're learning from across the North Sea at the moment. If you look in Belgium, for example, they legalized a form of euthanasia 10 years ago. There have been 8,000 cases. There's been extension to people who are not mentally competent, even though it's against the law. People with dementia have been killed. One third of cases now in parts of Belgium involve people who are unable to make a decision. There have been the very high profile cases, of course, of the two twins who were deaf and then going blind, who were killed, of the woman who was depressed and was killed without her family being told, someone else with anorexia. And so it goes on. They've just all but legalized euthanasia for children under 16 with terminal illnesses now. And then in the Netherlands, we have a 15 to 20% increase in cases every year since 2006, with mobile units going to people's homes. We have under what's called the Groningen Protocol, the killing of disabled babies. So we've had and again, this is in peer-reviewed medical journals, 22 babies with spina bifida were given lethal injections in the Netherlands. And the point is that people talk about safeguards, but in practical terms, what happens when you change the law is three things. The first thing is that people go up to the new law. The second is that people go beyond it. And in Belgium, the very first case after they changed the law actually broke the guidelines, and there hasn't been a single prosecution despite flagrant breaking the guidelines. But the third thing that happens is that the public conscience changes, and people begin to think and find things acceptable that would horrify you or I in this country. So whenever Parliament has looked at this and they've looked at safeguards, they've decided that the safeguards that are being proposed are not safe. And the point is that once you establish assisted suicide or euthanasia as a right for any one particular group of people, then you inevitably get pressure to extend that beyond that group. So you start with the mentally competent, it then becomes the incompetent who it's argued would have wanted it anyway. You start with adults, you go to Gillett competent children less than 16. You start with people with terminal illnesses, and it's a mystery to me why Dignity and Dying campaigning for those with terminal illnesses when in fact other people might argue that they've got a bigger case because of more suffering.
Then
you go to disability and chronic illnesses.
Well, hang on a minute, Peter. Let's just get Joe's take on this then. That's a good question to ask Joe for Dignity and Dying. Would you like to come back on that?
Yeah, so Dignity and Dying is campaigning so that people who are dying can die well, and that's the remit of our campaign. There are people who fall outside of this remit and they're difficult cases. People like Tony Nicholson, for example, who wouldn't have been allowed an assisted death under the law that we campaign for, or the law that Lord Faulkner is putting forward in the House of Lords in the summer. But
so why you have to
draw the line somewhere.
Why are you singling out dying people to remove protection from?
Had an awfully long time
to
talk. Let me finish.
Yeah, Peter, could you let Jo finish, please? Because she needs to get her point across.
So Dignity and Dying is focused on people who are dying well. And at the moment, there are people who, even with the best possible palliative care, are not dying well. And that's what Dignity and Dying's campaign is for, and that's all Dignity and Dying's campaign will ever be for. It's about that small number of people who potentially will die badly and the broader public who want this choice in case that is them at the end of their lives.
Joe Cartwright and Dr Peter Saunders from Care Not Killing, of course, and Joe Cartwright from Dignity and Dying. Thank you both for joining in on the show this morning.